It's a very difficult topic to talk about. We did start chatting last night about this topic, and it's a devastating new report that has been released by the Dina Project in Israel. And it lays bare the systematic sexual violence committed by Hamas during the October 7th attacks. And I urge you to read an opinion piece that has been published today by the South African Jewish Report by Wendy Hendler, who is the co-founder and the director of the Koleni. And that is an advocacy support group for victims of abuse. And in that piece, Wendy reflects on the horror, the legal complexities, and the urgent need for justice. And she joins us now to speak about what this report means for survivors, for the Jewish world, and for those determined to see justice. Wendy, firstly, thank you for joining us. And secondly, thank you for writing such a moving piece. I don't know what the right word is. On the one hand, warmed, and on the other hand, horrified by what is coming out of this 84-page dossier. In your piece, you speak about the shattered hope that the female hostages were spared. How hard was it for you to read the report?
Well, we were hoping against hope all along that these hostages would not suffer the same fate as Amit Susana, who was the first returned hostage to speak out about the sexual violence she experienced. Part of us knew deep down that the likelihood was that what happened to her was happening to them, similar acts, but we hoped it wasn't. But this report proves our worst fears. So it's just heartbreaking, really it is.
You highlight in this response that you've written how silence and denial have surrounded these crimes. Why do you think the world has struggled to confront this truth?
I think when it comes to Jewish people and Israeli women, there's a double standards. It can't have happened to Jewish women. Yes, believe all women except Israeli women. And we've fought this and battled this since October the 7th, and we've had some impact, but there's blind spots and there's an unwillingness to hold to account the perpetrators of these terrible acts. And this report is going to do just that. So it's while it's hard to read and heartbreaking, it's also very hopeful, because this could set a precedent for the prosecution of conflict-related sexual violence in war zones in different parts of the world. Because what they're saying now is that even though we can't link a specific perpetrator to a specific victim, we can hold them accountable under crimes of the masses. Committing a crime under cover of the masses is no longer, you can no longer get away with that, because you bear collective responsibility when you form part of a mass which commits these horrendous acts, where there's no moral restraint, there's no moral compass, there's no humanity. Mm. Anything is allowed, but you can hide behind the masses, because it can never be proven that you are a... Firstly, most of the victims were killed, so you don't even have witnesses. Secondly, the ones who've remained alive, most of them are too traumatized to be able to speak out, certainly not now, perhaps in years to come, possibly never. And you don't have a way of pinning a crime on an individual. So the individuals believe that they get off scot-free. This is saying, no, we are going to find a legal remedy. We're going to find a way to amend the law to hold you accountable as a member of a group that committed these horrendous crimes. So it's will set legal precedent. And it will change the reality, you know, on the ground.
The Dina Project talks about what they call silent witnesses, which is the bodies themselves as evidence. I mean, as you say, many of the people were killed, and those who survived are too traumatized to speak out about what happened to them, particularly sexually. How powerful, in your view, is this concept of silent witnesses? In other words, the bodies.
Well, it's very, very powerful, because across these six locations, the sexual violence committed was systematic and repeated in nature. And the bodies speak to what happened to them. So they were tied to poles, the position the bodies were found in, you know, with the mutilation, private parts. It was clear what had happened to these multitudes of these women. And there's also the evidence that the terrorists filmed themselves and shared on social media. And there's eyewitness reports, and there was the first responder reports, and there were the families who witnessed these horrors. So that what they're saying is we've got enough evidence without the actual witnesses needing to appear in a court of law. We've got enough evidence to hold groups, whole groups of people to account, and also to prove a chain of command that these were not random haphazard acts. This was premeditated, and instructions were given to commit these acts. This was not coincidental. And if you can hold to account the commanders, then you can make a big impact in this area worldwide, because conflict-related sexual violence is known and has been known for eons. And there have not been successful prosecutions up till now. So if you can hold the instructors and the commanders accountable, you will change the landscape of conflict-related sexual violence in the whole world. So this is, it's huge, and it's brave, and it's novel. And these people are finding ways to work within the law to achieve accountability. You know, these are the silent victims, and that's what's called the Dina Project, because it's after the biblical Dina, who was sexually assaulted and had no voice. And this is to give voice to the people who've both died and who are still alive and are suffering the consequences of this abuse.
Wendy, I have a colleague who works as a journalist in Gaza. He is Gazan. And a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to him about this, and he said to me, all of it's nonsense, because Hamas is a religious body, and rape and sexual violence and is not condoned by their religion. And then I hear you saying, that it's predetermined, and that all of this shows that an order was actually given to carry this kind of action out.
Yeah, we heard this, you know, this was a great excuse and a great cover to say it's not possible that this happened. But we know for a fact. I mean, we know from our witness, one victim who came forward, and now we've got 14 other ladies all reporting similar acts of being touched in their private parts, of forced nudity, of threats of forced marriage, of sexual abuse. Every single female hostage who's come out is testifying to the same kind of abuses. So you can pretend it away, but the fact is that these were horrendous crimes carried out by a massive group of people against innocent victims across a number of sites, systematically and in a planned way. So we know the truth. There's no debating it, actually, sadly. We know the truth.
You were talking about the legal aspect, and in this article you wrote, you mentioned that traditional legal frameworks may not apply here. What new legal ideas stood out to you in the report?
Well, the main idea is that you can hold, they're going to attempt to hold people liable under the idea of collective responsibility, that if you took part in a mob action, you are as liable as the other individual next to you. You all took part in the same behavior, and you cannot excuse it that you were carried away by the mob attitude, you know, the mob violence at the time. Each and every person in that mob is individually and collectively
responsible.
Yeah.
You also write
There's
about
no escaping this.
I mean, following on from that, you also write about the need to hold perpetrators accountable without relying on survivor testimony. I mean, you've hinted at it. Why is that so important in this case?
Because sadly, we don't have most of these women were raped and then murdered, and some were assaulted after death even. I mean, these crimes were so unimaginably horrible. So we don't have, most of the victims are no longer alive. So you can't put, normally for a court to prosecute such a case, you need a victim to give evidence in court, and the perpetrator has to be given the right of response. So here we don't have victims. We don't have, the majority of people who were attacked in this way are no longer alive. So you need to find alternate routes to prosecute, and to particularly prosecute the leadership of Hamas, who instigated. Yeah.
It's something I've wondered about. I haven't seen a lot of reports about it. Were the Israeli men also sexually abused?
Yes, there were. There were men who were sexually abused as well, and some have come forward and spoken, and the majority of them will never speak. I mean, it's just too difficult for especially when it happened in front of their families. I mean, a man is meant to be strong and the protector. Mm. And now suddenly they are in the state of helplessness. So the humiliation, that degradation, is just so hard for them to speak about. And also, what conflict-related sexual violence does and aims to do is to degrade the entire system, the entire society, the country. Because here were the men who are meant to protect their women. Never mind, could they not protect their women? They had to stand by helplessly and watch this happen to their woman, but it was happening to them as well. So this is what conflict-related sexual violence does, and it silences people. And this report is breaking that silence, and it's speaking out, and it's taking it into the public eye, and it's refusing to condone these acts done under the cover of the masses. And this is a group of strong legal minds who really, you know, they're creating a legal precedent. This is about as big as it gets for us and for our victims to have, you know, to be validated and heard, and for us to say we won't give up until we hold these people to account, whichever way we can.
When we started chatting, you mentioned that there's this idea that Jewish women don't get sexually abused or raped or whatever. Were you surprised by that reaction? And why do people even have that kind of thinking in the first place?
I put it down to just an unconscious blind spots, you know. Often people are anti-Semitic without even wanting to admit it to themselves, without even noticing it. Sometimes it's a narrative that social media has propagated and that the media has spun, and people have bought into that. So there's just an inability to look beyond the veil, the lies and the distortion that people are fed when it comes to Jewish and Israeli women. There's no logical understanding for this. It's irrational.
How do we, as a South African Jewish community, honor the victims and support justice without re-traumatizing ourselves or others?
I think that a way to do it really is to follow this report as it unfolds, as the legal cases start to be heard. You know, I think we've got to look a little bit, you know, we've re-traumatized ourselves over and over again, even like this report opens up those wounds again. But at least this time you can say it's hopeful. Something is being done, changes are being made, our victims are being given a voice, and this is new territory that's being opened. So I think that we can follow, we can care, we can support, and we can also give ourselves some support in the hope that something will change and that the lies will be dispelled and that our truths will be validated and things will change into the future, not only for the Jews and not for Israeli society, but for the whole world when it comes to the prosecution of conflict-related sexual violence. So I think we need to have try and have a positive approach to this report and, you know, a hopeful approach for the future. I mean, that's what I'm taking from it. And I found this very encouraging.
What's the bottom line that gives you hope that justice for these atrocities might still be possible?
The hope is that within the legal channels, there's a way to get around these blocks. You know, I mean, they are talking about amending the law. you amend the law, and then you've got strength. You've got a way to prosecute. It's no longer, we can't prosecute these cases. You've actually got a legal vehicle to hold people to account, put them behind bars, whatever it will take. And I think that's very, very, very hopeful. And that's what I'm holding on to. And I believe that these women, these legal minds, are brilliant. The people involved, you can see their passion and their commitment. I mean, this report they've been compiling over months and months of work. This is evidence to the last T. You know, it's photographic evidence, it's forensic evidence, it's eyewitness evidence, it's every kind of evidence possible they've collected. And they've used that to compile this report, and they are going to find ways to amend the law to allow for these prosecutions. So these are a group of people who are not giving up, and they're making waves. And I think we're going to see unbelievable things coming out of this.
As you mentioned, I mean, the intention of carrying out these acts is to degrade us, and the best way to respond to that and not be degraded is to speak out, and as you said, follow the case, which is exactly what I plan on doing, and I'm sure all of us plan on doing. Part of me is heartbroken talking to you, and another part of me understands that there is reason for hope, and that something good can come out of this. Wendy Hendler, co-founder and director of Kolleni South Africa, thank you for your courage in writing and also talking so honestly about such a painful subject, and for your work in supporting survivors. May your voice and the voices of those silenced continue to lead us towards truth and justice.